and gore, and sometimes a little more. My Bloody Podcast.
What's up, everyone? I'm so excited. It's episode number 47 of My Bloody Podcast. We are here today.
We've lost them now.
I'm just super excited. It's going to be a fun as hell show here on My Bloody Podcast, episode number 47. I'm Brian Kluger, and I am joined by that ghoulish man who I think has been buried, chopped up, drowned, cut into a million pieces more times than I'd like to admit. Preston Barta, he always comes back. He always has a skip in his step, even if he's missing a limb. Preston Barta, my man! What's up?
Yeah, I'm looking like what's her face from the new Hellboy. Like, I'm just sprawled witch. Out in pieces on the couch.
Knees wide apart.
Mila Jovovich, yeah.
Yes, indeed. You doing all right, bud?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Staying busy.
Yeah, well, yes, yes. Both of us are staying busy. We have lots of horror stuff to get to.
Yes.
We want to say thank you again, if you listened last week to our show, Owen Edgerton, director of Mercy Black on Netflix. Thank you for joining us. We very much enjoyed having you on and hope to have you on sometime in the future, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. He was great fun. Just one of the guys, just one of us, just geeking out about horror films.
One of us. So yeah, our main event today, our main feature presentation is Prince of Darkness, the 1987 John Carpenter film. Very exciting. We'll be talking about that a little later, along with the Mondo release, the record vinyl release album soundtrack of Prince of Darkness. We'll be talking about that. And of course, bloody questions and bloody recommendations, which I have a doozy this week. Very excited to talk about. But first, Preston, my main man from FreshFiction.tv and the Denton Record Chronicle, we got to get down to the news, the bloody news this week, which there's some kind of cool stuff in there, won't you say?
Kind of. There's some really good stuff.
There is. So let's jump right in. We talk about this pretty much every week now because we're just so excited. It's the new Chucky movie, and there is a brand new trailer, which we finally get to hear Chucky's voice and see some of the people in it. And I must say, after watching this, I'm kind of excited for this. There are some definitely creepy moments here.
Yeah, we're getting more into like what the new system, like the buddy system, is, which is funny to say. But it's kind of getting into that small soldiers type thing that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago when we first started getting wind of this film existence. But yeah, we get to see more horror moments with the cast and see Tim Matheson in the film introducing this new buddy system. There's a name for it, right?
Yeah. But so it's there was a so this buddy system. So in the original Child's Play, it was called the good guy doll, and so this one is called My Buddy, BUDDI, which I would imagine is kind of like interface. So this buddy is like kind of like that good guy doll, but I guess it does all sorts of things. Computer, it has AI, and then it looks like there's an app on your phone to control it, control the stuff in your house. It's called the buddy system, not BUDDY, but BUDDI. Kind of like iTunes or something like that, which this podcast is on. So I'm curious to see how that all works in, you know, horrifically into this movie.
Yeah, because, you know, as I've mentioned quite a few times on here, I'm a new father, and so I have a 20-month-old. And I remember one of the first gifts that we got that I have not opened yet is this bear toy that has a camera inside it, so you can like communicate with loved ones and control it through an app. And then I've heard horror stories about people hacking into it and just watching you, like the same kind of fear that I have with my own phone. After, you know, that Citizen 4 documentary, I definitely put tape over my laptop. So that just feeds more into the paranoia of today. And so, yeah, it's terrifying to kind of bring that whole angle into it. And I think it's a smooth way to take change everything up for the franchise. So it can be really bad and goofy. There's like one shot in the trailer where he's like trying to tap his phone and it's all the apps like shitting out on him or something. But it could be kind of cheesy and not really be the movie that we want it to be. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of great imagery in the film and death scenes. So I wouldn't suggest like stopping and pausing the trailer to see who dies. But it's a Chucky movie. There's a good chunk of the people that pop up on the screen are probably going to die. But
yeah, and like, his name is Chucky, and the kid's name is Andy. So we're going with the same kind of characters here. So
Mark Hamill does speak in this trailer, and that was what I was looking for. And it's only for like half a second. And what does he say? Like, good evening, Andy, or something?
Yes.
Something like that. Sleep tight, Andy.
Yes. But it sounded fine. It sounded okay.
Yeah, it sounded like Brad Dourif a little bit. So, I'm curious to see how much he'll speak in this film, or if he's going to be more of like a silent killer type, kind of like Mike Myers or something like that, but just talk sparingly. I don't know. So that's what I'm curious about, is if we're going to have like these good, like Freddy Krueger jokester moments. So, there's enough here to get me to go see it, and I'm excited about it, especially with the IT producers being behind it. It just looks good, shot well, good cast. So, seems promising.
Yeah. Let's hope for the best. That's all we can do.
Right. And it comes out June 21st.
There you go. Perfect. So the next bit of news, moving on, there's going to be a documentary about the life and career of the horror maestro himself, Lucio Fulci, who gave us movies like Zombie. Very excited about this. I kind of like a
Beyond. Yeah.
Yes. Kind of like a retrospective documentary about his career and his life and how he made his movies. It looks fun. Like, I'm into this. I love stuff like this, and I'm glad this guy, this Italian director, is getting the due diligence of like a cool little doc about his life. This is because he's made so many cool movies that us horror aficionados love so much, and a lot of filmmakers today have, you know, taken inspiration from him. So it would be cool to see this. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the angle that they're taking with this. So it's not like just a straight up talking heads type of documentary. It's going to be like a culmination of a mixture of a bunch of different styles. Like, they're going to do like a biopic kind of approach where they actually have somebody who's I think they're having somebody who's going to play him potentially in a movie, and they're doing research to study him and kind of get information on how to portray him in a movie. And so I guess that's like giving us the framing device for the film, which is kind of unique. It's got, you know, it's fake and everything, but it provides like a little more of a interesting way to kind of lure you into the film, instead of just being like, hey, here's so-and-so, like, Fabio Frizzi talking about like how great it was working with him, and all that's going to be there. There still are going to be interviews with Fabio Frizzi, who worked with him doing the score for his films, and some of his family. There's what's that other horror filmmaker, Michael Salvi.
Yes.
I'm butchering his name, but different types of Italian horror filmmakers. So like, they're going to be there, and then we're going to get some access to his daughters, who one of them, I believe his firstborn hasn't been on film, or we haven't got a lot of information from her. And also Camilla, which is the director's first assistant on some of his latest productions. And so we're going to have interview footage with her, and she actually passed away after they finished shooting the film. So you're going to get all this like personal stories and family video footage. So like that Amy, that A24 movie, Amy on Amy Winehouse, like that kind of personal touch to it. So I don't know. It just seems like they got a lot of ideas going on here, and it could be too much or it could be just the right amount to keep it things fresh. And so I don't know, like all those different ideas have me pretty excited about it. I think that's cooler than just having a straight up talking heads type of documentary.
I agree. I think it'll be cool in that we'll get to see like maybe reenactments and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe some onset footage. I'm excited for it. It's kind of a cool way to do it.
Yeah.
So that's coming out. We'll update you more on that. Moving on to another trailer that came out. This is a comic book based TV show that's coming out called The Boys. Now, I've read most issues of The Boys when it came out. And The Boys is basically about this group of humans, this people, who take care, in quote air quotations, of superheroes, meaning a lot of superheroes in this universe are just kind of assholes. Like, they save the world, they save you, but they kind of like destroy buildings and have to kill a couple other people, you know, collateral damage sort of thing. Yeah. And they're just real arrogant pricks. So think kind of like Avengers and like the Sokovia Accords, where they right. were, yeah, Civil War, where like, oh, we've killed all these people, we want to be in check. So instead of the government keeping these superheroes in check, it's this group of super violent people who are not afraid to kill superheroes if they do something wrong. And it is a really cool and super violent story because it's done by Garth Ennis, who did Preacher and Crossed and a bunch of other good stuff. So just like the Preacher TV series, Seth Rogen and his writing partner Evan Goldberg are producing and showrunning The Boys, which I am not a fan of. I do not want that to happen, and I'll tell you why. Because Preacher is one of the best stories you will ever read in your entire life. And I know you're thinking, Brian, it's a comic book. Yes, I know it's a comic book, but you've never read it. And if you did read it, you would know, holy shit, the story, the characters are so deep and meaningful and such a great story. It's insane how just amazing Preacher is. And then when I saw the TV series, which I was super excited for, Preacher, the TV series, has been tried to been done so many times on HBO, Showtime, and then eventually on AMC. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, I'm sorry, you fucked it all up. It's so bad and terrible and awful. You didn't put any it was just so bad. So I think they're going to do the same thing with this. I'm not happy about it. But the trailer itself, whoo, there's some good violent shit in there. Preston.
Yeah, so for, I guess, the other audiences who have no clue, do not have that context, have not read the comics, don't have that backstory at all, I think you can have fun. I actually enjoyed the AMC Preacher series, but I've heard from other people, there's a podcast I listen to, and one of the guys talks about how he's been fearful of it because Preacher is one of his favorite comics of all time. And so I can certainly understand that. But yeah, given as I am a person who doesn't have all that information, I can go into it fresh and enjoy it for what it is and what they do. And so I enjoy Preacher. I think it's fine. This one looks fun, too. It's a very unique story. I think you laid it down pretty well there in describing it. But it has like that no filter kind of thing, like Deadpool, and has the violence of Deadpool, and but you know, they're not breaking the fourth wall or anything like that, but a lot of winking and stuff like that. And so I think it could be fun. I like Carl Urban a lot.
I love that.
Always
love
been
that
very
guy.
Hopeful that one day we would have got another Dredd movie, because I love the shit out of Dredd.
And he's part of the Rohirrim from Lord of the Rings.
But, I mean, he's staying in the action at least. It's not like Brandon Routh, who like did one Superman. I think he came back, did that dog thing, whatever it's called. But at least he's like keeping it interesting and doing fun projects. So this one, I guess it looks fine to me. It looks fun. Has some good comedy, and as Brian said, really good violent scenes. There's like a shot of a baby with lasers coming out of the eye and decapitating somebody. So like that's just fun. I think that's a good invite the guys over and invite the boys over and have a couple of drinks and just have a good time laughing at all its absurdity. It's just going to be joyously berserk. And so
there you go.
Leslie, but joyous.
Yeah. Give it a
shot. Yeah, it's coming out on Amazon, July 26th.
I'm definitely going to give it a shot, but I'm not happy about it. So let's move on to the kind of cool news, kind of scary news. I don't think I want this in my house, but Sideshow Collectibles, Sideshow, known for putting out all these really cool statues and busts and toys and stuff like that. They're pretty expensive, but they're worth it because they're so detailed pieces of art, statues, sculptures. Excuse me. It looks like the Nun from the Conjuring series. The Nun is getting a more than a foot tall statue, and it looks horrific. I was reading about it. So it comes with two faces if you order it. The exclusive edition from Sideshow, it'll come with her normal face, but then there will
be a straight face, and then her mouth open.
Yeah, and then the additional face where it's like the sharp teeth and the yellow eyes, and she's like in her robe. Oh god, I sound like Mort Goldman for some reason. Yeah. But no, this thing I do not want in my place. Like, it is 7 inches wide, it is 13.5 inches tall, and it's just going to be staring at you when you're watching it, and when you turn out the light, you'll probably see the eyes. You don't want that. But this just looks all sorts of cool and creepy. It comes with, like, she's on a little base with, like, the stone archway and a candle column. I just, I'm out. I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, those details are insane. Like, you can, like, look a close-up of the hand, and you can go on sideshow.com, and you could buy it there. It's $200, but don't let that scare you, because you could also do a monthly payment plan. I think you can go just as low as you can get is like $60. So if that scares you right away, just the payment, that you can work something out there. So that's cool. But yeah, if you look through the slideshow for the slideshow figurine, you can like look at the details of the hand, and it's crazy, like just the veins. I'm just like picturing Steve Carell from 40-Year-Old Virgin designing this thing, being like, I am now painting your silver pants blue. Like, just like that amount of detail that somebody just had to kind of create one of those. So certainly understand. I mean, you can see the money all there. So yeah, if you're a hardcore collector, that's your sort of thing. But similar to when we were talking about that Phantasm collectible set, within the golden, or not golden, the chrome sphere. Yeah, I'm not going to spend the money on that sort of thing, but it's, yeah, if you're into that, yeah, go for it. They'll work with you.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it looks cool, but yeah, I would not have this in my house. Just the image of her from thinking of The Conjuring 2 scares the shit out of me. I would be like, I don't know, there's that viral video that went around where there's like a scary toy in the hallway and the kid comes around the corner and just kicks the thing. Yes. That would be me.
Now, yeah, that's this statue is really scary. And Sideshow has been around a while. Yeah, the thing is, the statue is going for $225, and I guess pre-orders are on April 18th, today, between 12 and 3. So if you didn't get your pre-orders in, you have missed it already, but we're just talking about it now. So that's how they do their stuff. But yeah, sideshow.com, go there, check it out. It is scary as hell, and let us know, mybloodypodcast@gmail.com, if you bought it. But
yeah. Send us some pictures. I guess when it comes, it says it's supposed to arrive in like September or November this year.
Right.
So just around the Halloween area.
Very cool. Moving on to a bit of cool news. I'm pretty interested in this. One of our favorite movie studios that we usually get to see quite a bit, At Fantastic Fest and other things. AGFA, the American Genre Film Archive, has teamed up with our favorite Shout Factory, Scream Factory, and are going to relist a shitload of amazing titles. I'm super excited about this. Preston, are you excited?
Oh, hell yeah. There's like some films that I haven't, ones that I really love, like Black Christmas. But then there's ones that I've been dying to see that I haven't just found the time for yet, especially after doing Willard not too long ago. They're doing Ben. So there's just like a lot of great films that, and it's so great because, you know, I go to the Alamo Draft House all the time. They do screenings of like old horror films and these kind of lost and forgotten ones, ones that just got lost in time. And so it's just such a joyous occasion to go to a theater and just enjoy a bonkers or terrifying or really strange genre film. And so, yeah, just the fact that they're being brought back to the screen again is just that it's great. I always enjoy watching like films that came out like 30 plus years ago or so in the theater, because you know today we have the attention span of gnats, and so trying to watch these while you have a kid running around or the dog's barking or whatever. But yeah, just giving that undivided attention watching of movies like this, that's just fantastic. So yeah, I'm absolutely excited about this. Great stuff. Slumber Party Massacre. I mean, you can look up the list online, just like Google the AGFA Shout Factory, and then you'll see a list of all these 50 cult classic films, including Willard. So I'm very down for this.
I'm excited. Check it out. We'll update you when we get more information.
Yeah, we'll try to go to some of these too.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see, what else do we have here? Let's go quickly through the home video release updates. Anything that you're looking forward to home video wise that are coming out from Arrow or Scorpion or Arrow? I said Arrow. I mean Scream Factory.
There's a few that are on the horizon, but there's a couple that have either coming out this week or have been out for just a little bit that I'd like to at least mention. We may cover them down the line, but I was bringing up to Brian that there's this movie called The Manitou, which I watched, and I think it's more insane than Sleepwalkers, and I think Sleepwalkers is one of the most crazy effed up movies I've ever seen. And the fact that do you know what this movie's about? The Manitou?
No, I don't. So I actually emailed and get my copy in the next couple days. So I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. So I hope we can get to this next week or in the next couple of weeks. Take a drink. We'll cover that one. But yeah, just to kind of set it up a little, the movie came out in 1978 and it involves a reincarnation of a 400-year-old demonic Native American spirit. And where it comes from is a woman has a lump in her neck and it comes out of that. So that's how you know that you're about to watch one of the most insane movies you've ever seen. And for some reason, Tony Curtis is in the movie. And so, man, just the things that happen in this movie, like I cannot wait. We're definitely going to cover this. So I at least wanted to bring that up. And then there's this other movie that so that's coming from Scream Factory. I believe it's either out now or it's coming out this next week or something like that. But yeah, it's out now, actually. And then the other one is Superstition. Have you seen or heard of this one?
Seen or heard or this one? And oh my God, somebody's at the door. I can't believe it. It is our good friend from way back in the day, our podcast favorite, Andrew Conway. How are you doing, man?
Hey guys, how's it going?
he showed up out of thin air. It's part of this supernatural devil entity. Are you the devil, man?
Am I what? Am I allowed to say that?
Yes. We're just glad you're here. But Preston, you were about to say something about the superstition. This is paired with the Manitou.
Yeah. Well, that's how I got them sent to me, but they're both coming out this week, I believe. But yeah, I was just seeing if you had heard of it. Superstition came out in 1982.
I don't remember that. No, I do not.
So I think you would get a real kick out of this. So if that's also a movie that you can put on your radar, I would check it out too. It came out 1982, but it took a couple of years for it to actually like hit the screen. There's like an ordeal there, but it's kind of like Evil Dead. Involves a witch being put to death around like the, you know, the Salem witch trials and that sort of thing. So like or like 1600s, that sort of thing. But she swears vengeance against the people who put her to death and then like haunts this land. So it's a lot like, you know, Conjuring or something like that, but it has a witch. So it has like that aspect, haunted house aspect, and it also has like a slasher film kind of aspect to it as well.
You had me so at Evil just, Dead, man. You had me yeah. at Evil Dead.
Then that's all you need to know. So it's a super fun movie, and the characters are actually pretty good. They're not like deadbeat. It's not like a dead teenager fest, even though it is, but there's like more going on with the character. So, yeah, Superstition, that's also out through Scream Factory.
Have you heard of those movies, Andrew?
I have not, actually.
So we talked about The Manitou and Superstition.
Okay, yeah. I haven't seen these, but I can't wait. They're coming soon, Scream Factory.
Yes. And, of course, we got some more information on Night of the Creeps.
Yes, Night of the Creeps.
Yes.
Yeah, so, is that Shane Black?
Night of the Creeps?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, dude, Monster Squad? In Night of the Creeps? Yeah, like no, not Fred Shane Decker, Black, yeah. Fred Decker, right?
Yeah, Fred Decker.
Okay. So yeah, that's finally coming as a collector's edition in Scream Factory, which is super cool too.
Yeah, it's coming out in late May, and we found out that there's going to be the theatrical cut, the director's cut, all sorts of new interviews. They're even doing like haunted grounds type of thing where they look at the locations of the film with Fred Decker and actor Jason Lively. So it's got like all these new interviews with the actors, quite a few of them, and the actresses, and they got one with the editor. So there's a bunch of new material there. So yeah, keep that one. If you love that movie, Night of the Creeps, purchase that.
Badass. So in our last little bit of news, it's like kind of like we're going to talk about it. Mondo was kind enough to send us the new soundtrack, the vinyl record release of John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. And we got it. We listened to it. So Prince of Darkness, you have to be a John Carpenter fan to like his movies, and you have to be a John Carpenter fan specifically to like his music, because basically John Carpenter plays three notes over and over for an hour. You know, kind of like if you've listened to They Live, it's three notes, ding, ding, dunk, repeated for an hour. Basically the same goes for this score, Prince of Darkness, but instead of ding, ding, dink, it's do, do, dunk. But it's good. It's haunting. It's that synth. It's even got tons of elements and like the almost that Chinese feel from Big Trouble in Little China in there. But it's like
a bridge between Big Trouble in Little China and They Live. It has like that twangy kind of feel to it as well, with like this melody from like Nightmare on Elm Street a little bit too.
Right, yeah. So it sounds great. Mondo did such a good job on this 180 gram vinyl. It sounds so good, and I've been listening to it on the new Yamaha MusicCast 500 turntable, and holy shit, this turntable is unbelievably good. It's sleek, it's a bit lightweight, but I mean, it also has a heaviness to it, and it's sleek, black, and silver. It sounds amazing, and it's wireless. You can wirelessly play the record to your wireless speakers. Holy shit, amazing. It sounds great. I'm going to review that in depth at some other point on High Def Digest, but with this record from Mondo, I mean, it sounds good, because this is a re-release from an original soundtrack, but now you can hear like all those little notes in there, and even kind of like the wind blowing more perfectly in the background, which you'll hear in this as well, as long as maybe some like little souls coming up here and there. But yeah, it again, if you're a fan of John Carpenter scores with that old nostalgic synth feel, this is a must-own for you. You're going to want to own this. But if you're just you know, a regular person just looking for something cool to listen to, this is probably not for you, just because it's John Carpenter's music. I wouldn't say it's iconic, but is it great? It's up to the listener, but it's not like something John Williams would make, you know, which is like full of depth and life. John Carpenter's scores are pretty much just very one or two or three notes repeated over and over, but super fun. So still, if you're a fan of the horror movie soundtracks, yes, 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 all the way. But Preston, what about the cover art and the vinyl look to it? Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. It was designed by Sarah Deck, and she, when we went to Fantastic Fest and saw Suspiria, she actually designed the artwork for that. So she's done some incredible work. And so kind of like They Live vinyl that we talked about with the Mondo guys a couple months ago, I guess now.
Right.
It's very simple. It's not as cool as that one, just because like that one had, you know, the glasses approach and had a bunch of this cool writing and text on it. This one's pretty simple in that the front cover just had, it's made to look like the room that the satanic cylinder's inside. So you just have a crucifix on the wall with the green, the slime that's kind of circulating in there, kind of glowing against the wall. But it looks really cool. And then on the reverse side, you have the cylinder itself with candle lights, and then the eight tracks that they have on there. There's, you know, the two sides has eight tracks. But then when you open it up, it's capturing one of the creepiest scenes in the entire film toward the end, where, you know, a woman gets trapped in the, I guess, I don't know, what would you call it, like eternal abyss or something? I don't know. It's just like really dark. It's actually a John Carpenter's swimming pool. But it's a girl, a lady floating in, which is essentially like hell. And so very cool. Just captures like all the right moments from the film and just puts it into this like wonderful package. What else? I would agree with you about the simplicity of the music too, but it's a great vinyl record for, like you said, people who collect horror soundtracks or are a fan of John Carpenter. But it's also, I would say, it's a great one to put on when you have trick-or-treaters coming by during Halloween, because it has that kind of atmospheric, moody sound to it that I think would creep people out. So it's good for that, too. So
do you think it would be good for Amazon Prime and Sexy Time?
Yeah.
No, it would not. But yeah, there's also a liner notes in there with a couple paragraphs from Alan Hallworth and John Carpenter. And yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, and the vinyl itself is made to look like the green slime that's in that cylinder. So they're going all out on it.
So yeah, go to mondotees.com, get your copy today if you are a big fan.
I believe it's $30, and you can get it within 7 to 10 days, I believe.
There you go. Thank you, Mondo. But yes. That wraps it up for the news. Let's move on to our bloody question. I'm asking Andrew this, and I'm asking Preston this, and we went to Reddit, and we asked the question to this, but going along the lines of Prince of Darkness, our bloody question of the week is, if you had the spirit of Satan trapped in a bottle, how would you use it? So, I'll read you mine first.
All right.
I would use it. Me personally, I might bring that bottle to Las Vegas and use its powers to try and win at craps. After that, bring peace on earth to all living things and an endless supply of Boston cream donuts for everyone. Also, everyone would have different horns of different sizes. I feel like that's how, that was my stepping off point. But Preston,
where you have to have a good balance of both, because I think the immediate thought when you hear that is like, I'm not going to admit to you this sort of shady, dark shit I would do with that bottle.
So there'd be so much stuff you could do. So Preston, what would you do if you had the spirit of Satan trapped in a bottle?
I'm going to treat it like a genie, in that a superpower that I so want to have is especially now for how busy I am, is the ability to stop time. So I would use it for that. But I did see some of the answers on Reddit, which we'll get to, that I wish I had thought of myself, because there's like so many. So I'll save it for you to read that, and then I'll be like, yep, that was the one that I would use.
Sweet, sweet. All right, Andrew, I know you just got here, but I'm curious if you had the spirit of Satan trapped in a bottle, how you would use it.
So what are the limits to it? Like,
there's no limits.
So having the spear of Satan, what does it do? Like, you,
whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you want it to do. You have this entity that could do
anything. I mean, I like the way that Brian put it, where he has like a mixture of good things and kind of bad things in there. It's almost like a tit for tat thing. Like, I do a good thing, but we also have the devil horns, so Krispy Kreme donuts and devil horns.
A French horn. Everyone got a French horn in their
Starbucks. Could be.
the Satan's music is all French horn, right?
Correct.
Okay, makes sense. I don't know. That's a hard question. I think something that would be good and bad. Maybe I would use it to go and actually insert myself into like all my favorite movies and ruin them for other people. But great for me.
Like, would you ruin it like by your character, or would you ruin it by spoiling it at the beginning?
Well, I wouldn't spoil it. But no, I just insert myself into like to movies.
You're Han
like,
dies at the end.
Exactly. Why is he in here? I'm sitting with Han and I shoot first before him. Like,
you shoot him in the leg.
That'd be hilarious if you just tried to tip people off that they're going to die by the end of the movie. Be like, just since I mentioned Han, just be like, you better stay away from your son.
Yeah.
You might get a sword in the gut. I don't know.
Just like, yeah, so it'd be fun, but people would hate me for it.
That's a good thing. I like it.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. Well, thank you. Anything else? That's all you got. Let's go to Reddit, because there's some great Reddit shit here. Flash Arnold said, I would have Ozzy Osbourne drink it so he could stay with us another 5,000 years.
Yeah, so that was the one that I was thinking a lot about, because there's so many different, like David Bowie or something. Like, just so many people I would like to just keep alive.
Hunter S. Thompson, yes. Viking 1976 just said he would use the devil in a bottle as lotion.
Puts the lotion on his skin.
Ben Tesaurus says, hell of a sex toy. Which,
jeez.
Holy God. And like, I thought about that, and I'm like, is that something like the pick of destiny? I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Christian Hash Brown said, we'd probably just jam to some Merciful Fate or Satan's Host and smoke a bowl. Oh, thank you, Christian Hash Brown.
I feel like you can do that now, though. You don't need Satan's.
Right. You could just say it's Satan in a bottle. I don't know. Satan in a bottle, baby. Rub me the right way. Samantha Berry said, well, it's Satan, so I'd probably keep him in the bottle, not gonna lie. Yabs had a great idea. I'd make some evil barbecue sauce. Holy shit. I'm interested. So, Hazarki had my favorite, because he, like, went with me. Have you read this yet, Preston?
No, I haven't, so okay. Bring it.
So from what I said about playing craps in Vegas and Boston Cream Donuts, he went along with that. So he said, Hazarki said, I haven't seen that movie before, so I do not know what the devil can do in that show. Plus, I do not know of this craps game. However, I am inspired to write you a story of consequences due to the aforementioned wishes. Please continue reading. Hazarki's very, very, very nice. In the spirit of a cunning, malevolent bottle-bound entity, if I was in the bottle and you made such a request of me, you will always win at craps. In fact, you can only win, no matter what you do. While you're winning, your loved ones will wilt, and you feel a compulsive need to keep winning at craps no matter what. Plus, for some reason, you cannot keep your winnings. Strangely, you do not want to keep your winnings. Even more unusual, you can only get rid of them by buying these Boston Cream donuts and force-feeding everyone these donuts till they literally burst from the quantity. You do this indefinitely. Even better, you're aware of what you're doing. Thus, in the end, you do get your wishes, because everyone eventually rests in peace due to overfeeding of Boston Cream donuts. Plus, they do finally all get different sizes. Horns, if you get my meaning. Aren't I nice? Hazarki, oh my goodness.
watch that guy be like one of the most killer mean dudes ever.
Yeah.
And he wrote that.
But I mean, that was great.
I mean, that's great. Like, you look at the dark side of what you wish for, because, every good thing comes with a bad thing.
Right. And I thought that was kind of cool because it kind of ties into that first episode on CBS of The Twilight Zone in a way. Same principle with Kumail. So there you go. And then Movie Mike 007 said it would make for a great conversation piece, or at least a unique door jam. Dr. Wonderbar said it would be used as cocktails. And then Blarg 2022 went, he didn't understand the question and started talking about Christianity, Muslims, Jewish, God, Jesus, and Satan. He didn't understand it. So Blarg, we're not going to read yours because it seemed you got angry. But thank you to all on Reddit who participated. If you have something else to say, please email us at mybloodypodcast@gmail.com. If you had the spirit of Satan trapped in a bottle, how would you use it? I'm curious on what Cole Clay would say about this.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him.
We'll ask him and maybe mention it next time. But moving on, our bloody recommendations. Andrew, I know you'll think of one while we're both talking about it. But our bloody recommendations are when we pick like a lost or a forgotten vintage or even new horror film or TV show that you just want to suggest and get people to watch. It's super fun. I have a really funny one. But Preston, what is your bloody recommendation today?
My bloody recommendation is brand new, coming out this Friday, actually, or at least in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's already out in like New York and LA, but it's Claire Denis's High Life.
Oh, yeah, High Life. Saw that. I wanted to see that.
Yeah, it is a horror film. it's very uncomfortable. I said in my opening line of my review, it pulls from the darkest, most uncomfortable and perverted corners of the human mind. And just the fact that this movie was written, or at least co-written and directed by a 72-year-old woman is just insane to me. I think I brought up to Brian, like, either right after I saw it or before I saw it, you know, you look at Cormac McCarthy and The Counselor and how kind of dirty that movie is and makes you want to shower, and the fact that he's like 90 something years old, like older people can come up with some dark stuff. But this movie's pretty incredible, I have to say. I think I was the only one who liked it of the people that saw it with me, just because it is one of those movies that is not gonna win the feel good award or anything like that. The movie, I don't want to say too much about it, but it's like subtly split up into three different chapters. But at the beginning, so I guess to break down the structure, like the middle of the film is at the beginning, and then the beginning is in the middle, and then the end's at the end. But it takes place in space. It's got Robert Pattinson in it. It's got Juliette Binoche. And at the beginning, it's just Robert Pattinson and his young baby daughter, Willow. And she's probably like 13 months or 12 months or so, around a year or so, and she's just learning to walk and that sort of thing. But we don't know why he's there. We just know that he's floating around in space. We don't know where he's going, like what the mission is. We just instantly relate to this person, or at least for me, I'm projecting myself. I'm projecting my own son up onto the screen. So I'm relating to it that way. It's very quiet. He's like, they just established a routine for themselves. It's like a survival kind of thing. And so he's floating around in space. He's fixing things on the ship, just trying to do anything to kind of keep himself occupied and keep his sanity intact. So that's the first chapter. But we know throughout time that there's more people on board. We don't know where they are. So we can only just make assumptions. So that's what makes the movie more intriguing for the person, that they want to kind of find out and connect all the dots. But the second act is where the movie just becomes completely bonkers. And one of the critics who was at my screening just straight up walked out. And
I don't understand.
And I do understand why he did, because if you read like the just basic synopsis of the film, it involves people who are on death row, who are just going to die anyway, that they do these kind of like experiments out in space to kind of save humanity. And so they're just these guinea pigs. And so it's kind of like a Lord of the Flies type of scenario where there's no rules or regulations per se. So they're creating their own religions and beliefs and ways that they choose to live their lives. And it gets super dark. I mean, I have to mention that there's a thing in this movie called the fuck box. And it's exactly what you think it is.
I need a fuck box right now. Market it to me, I'll buy it.
This movie's terrifying, especially when it gets to that section of the film, just because it's kind of like the insanity at the end of Mother, before, you know, they get to the part that caused me to walk out. But it's just like chaos, and it explores like sexuality and morality in like fascinating ways, and holds a mirror up to us. And so that, as I've mentioned before, with other like these intellectual horror films or genre films that we've covered before in the past, like these are the kind of movies that I really gravitate towards, because it may not be the most enjoyable experience. It's kind of like a religious experience, a spiritual experience, because you're just like in it. You're just picturing yourself in this situation, and it's so fucked up and crazy that you're just curious as to where it's going to go and what it all means. And you don't really know what to think about it by the end of the movie. I was like, was it a good movie? Was it a bad movie? But for me, I liked it. I'm still thinking about it. It's been probably about a month since I've seen it. But if you're really into that sort of thing, movies that are really just insane, kind of, I would even put it on the same level as like maybe Suspiria or 2001 A Space Odyssey, where it's just so out there that we're probably going to be picking it apart for quite a while. And I feel like this movie's just going to fly underneath the radar. So I felt like I really had to recommend it this week. So A24's High Life, starring Robert Pattinson and Juliette Binoche. And Juliette Binoche, she's so good in this. She has like witch like long black hair. And when you see her in the fuck box, it's just insanity at its finest.
I want a behind-the-scenes thing of the 72-year-old director, female director, saying, okay, the fuck box, who's getting in the fuck box now? And Juliet raised her hand, I'm in the fuck box. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is the only movie where you'll see an Academy Award winner get in a fuck box that would probably even make Christian Grey be like, oh, shit, no. So, High Life. It's in theaters now. Go seek it out and have weird conversations with your friends afterwards.
I like it. All right. My bloody recommendation this week is insane, too. I don't know. Preston might have this on Scream Factory, but it came out on Scream Factory in 2014, and the movie is from 1981 and is called Evil Speak, all one word. Have you seen it, Preston?
I haven't, but I haven't watched it yet.
Have you seen Evil Speak? All right, so this is probably the only film in the world that is the main star is Ron Howard's brother, Clint Howard. He's the main guy in this movie. So this movie, Evil Speak, I remember seeing it, and it's just so crazy. So Ron Howard plays a Marine cadet, if you can believe it. He's gone to this military academy, and he is picked on by literally everyone there, even the adults and kids, everybody. Nobody likes him. So he's like constantly like ridiculed and beaten up and all this shit. So he kind of stumbles upon in like the basement of this military academy, this book. And supposedly this book is like the essence of Satan and was the book and diary of this guy named Father Esteban, played by the bald guy from Night Court. And so what happens in like a Carrie-like fashion, Ron Howard's character gets the book, summons the devil and the demons, and unleashes hell on all the people who tortured him. super fun. Clint Howard, yes. 1981 called Evil Speak. There are tons of deaths. There are wild hogs killing people, literally. Yes, it is on Scream Factory. So the director of this movie is called his name is Eric Weston, and he's kind of like one of those old school, kind of like Leonard Cohen type guys. So there's a commentary track with Eric Weston, who like doesn't really talk about the movie, but instead talks about Hollywood back in that time and all the fun shit that went on with it. And then there are interviews with the cast and crew. And they all talk about how horrible the screenplay was and the movie is. Super funny. But holy shit, Evil Speak, all one word. Look it out. Clint Howard at his finest without his brother there to hold his hand. Holy shit.
How long ago did you see this movie?
I saw this in college first, and then when it came out on Scream Factory.
Okay. Oh
yeah, it's so ridiculous and over the top and great. I love these old horror movies, but Clint Howard, man, how is this man not an Oscar winner? Preston, you gotta see Evil Speak.
Because he's too busy rubbing his nipples in Little Nicky.
Yes, that is true. That should have been the pick of the week this week, but it's not. Okay.
So we do need to do Little Nicky down the line.
Yes. So, Andrew, I think Andrew has a bloody recommendation off the top of his head, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
I have something that was scary when I was a kid. I actually haven't seen it, but I know it's actually out on DVD now, finally. And I'm excited to see how bad. I'm sure it's horrible now, but when I was a kid, it was a movie called The Peanut Butter Solution.
The Peanut Butter Solution?
Have you heard of it, Preston?
I have heard of it.
It's so this kid, he gets scared by these two ghosts, and he develops a disease called the fright, and it causes all his hair to fall out. And so the ghosts felt bad, so they ended up coming back and telling him a way to pretty much regrow his hair using a solution made of peanut butter and other things. But they warned him not to put too much on his head because dreadful things will occur. And unfortunately, he didn't listen. And
I feel like The Simpsons did this episode.
He put a little too much on his hair, and his hair started growing crazy. And like an evil witch kidnaps him and starts using his hair to make magic paintbrushes and cause paintbrushes to come to life. There's all this crazy stuff happening. And I just remember as a kid, there was a lot of scary moments for sure, but I'm sure it's wacky and crazy and not that good.
So I feel like
you never know. It could be like The Gate.
Yeah,
that's the funny thing is that, this came out around the same time as The Gate, and a lot of people compare these movies for some reason.
That sounds amazing, though. The Gate's still good. Is Stephen Dorff in this Peanut Butter Solution?
No, he's not. But so I'm curious. We should all watch it again and sort of see.
Yeah, we should come back. Yeah, because I believe I have seen this because I'm like scrolling through the stills of the film and it's just like jogging my memory a little bit. So yeah, I would love to go back and watch this.
Yeah,
you know, it might not be as scary as it was when I was younger, but
I'm curious
to see if that holds up.
No,
if the scares hold up.
I am too, just because, like, I remember when The Simpsons, when Homer Simpson tried to do that, and they put too much on it, and they said not to, and something happened. And there was a horror anthology film, maybe it was Body Bags, but one of them had somebody doing the same thing,
sort of similar,
growing the hair, and it went crazy. But The Peanut Butter Solution, that can go different ways. It sounds like almost like a porn film.
Urine of dogs or something.
Did you say the peanut butter what?
Solution. Yeah.
So it's almost like the final solution. The peanut butter solution. I like it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, according to IMDb, it came out in 1985, but I think it expanded in 1987. So, yeah, it was like this children's-looking horror film, adventure film.
Like a Saturday morning TV movie or something like that, and then they expanded it further. It did so well that they ended up expanding it or something to a full feature length film. I think it might have started out as an hour long, sort of creepy Saturday special.
After school special, The Peanut Butter Solution.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, I want to put peanut butter on my hair now. All right. Those are my bloody recommendations. If you have a recommendation, mention it to us at mybloodypodcast@gmail.com. But on to our
Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Before we move on, there's one thing that I need to mention that I forgot to.
Okay.
So I guess it could be sort of another bloody recommendation, but Weekend, Saturday in Dallas-Fort Worth, if you're in Dallas-Fort Worth, they're doing a special screening of Miami Connection.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, it came out in 1987. Draft House Films picked it up a couple years ago, I believe like 2012 or 2009, maybe before then. But are doing the special screening, and they're bringing in one of the directors of the film, who's also the star, Grandmaster YK Kim.
That's amazing.
So this movie, Andrew, have you heard of this movie?
Yes, Miami. I have. And yes. I've actually watched the trailer and a few scenes from it, and it's it looks amazing. Like this guy.
Yeah, it looks like what was that movie, Kung Fury?
Yeah,
Kung that kind of just something that celebrates the 80s, even though it came out in the 80s. But you can kind of imagine this movie coming out now, and it almost feels like it's a parody of like 80s films, because it has like that Karate Kid kind of vibe to it, and all those like video game arcade games kind of feel to it as well. It's about a martial arts rock band group that go up against this motorcycle gang of in ninjas and that sort of thing, and just like all the hijinks that they get into. So it definitely does have that Karate Kid kind of vibe to it. There's even like a do it for Johnny kind of moment in it, but it's a lot of fun. It's very goofy. The director Grandmaster YK Kim, I actually spoke to him on the phone, and I'm going to be releasing my interview with him pretty soon. So go on freshfiction.tv or Denton Record Chronicle, DentonRC.com, and then look for my interview with him there. But I had a good time talking to him and just kind of getting into the troubles that he encountered while making this film. He just described it as an absolute nightmare, but yet it's just one of those movies that is just so much fun to watch, and especially with the crowd, and good on Draft House Films for purchasing this film. I think it was like an original 35 millimeter print off of eBay, bought it for $35, found it, reached out to YK Kim, and then he was just like, I can't believe it. And because this movie just did not get the recognition that he wanted. He went to all these different studios and Universal and you name it, and they all just said, no, this isn't going to happen. It's trash. But yet audiences today are just eating it up, and it's just like one of those movies. I think it's so much better than The Room. A lot of people say it's like one of those movies that is just like so bad it's good. And yeah, it is. But it's just, there's such a charm to it, even if there's got bad performances and that sort of thing. But the fight scenes are really incredible. I think one of the movies I talked about not too long ago was Nemesis, and it has that sort of vibe where it's just like all the choreography, like everything that involves like these gangs going up against each other and fighting, is so much fun. But Miami Connection, it's a good time. So if you've never seen it, I highly recommend checking it out in the theater at the Alamo Draft House, where they're doing that special screening with Grandmaster YK Kim. So had to bring that up real quick. So Miami Connection,
sweet. Yeah, go check that out. And I remember when that actually, they released it, I think through Mondo, for the first time on home video. There were screenings all around the country, and I think they brought in the band that's in the movie to play the songs from the movie.
Yeah, Dragon Sound. Yeah, yes. They did this.
And if you go and look them up on YouTube, and you're like, holy shit.
It's good music.
In the movie too.
Check that out at Alamo for sure. It's coming out. But let's go on to our feature presentation, Prince of Darkness. John Carpenter film, 1987. This is part of his Apocalypse trilogy, being in the center of The Thing and In the Mouth of Madness. The movie, again, came out in 1987. It was a budget of $3 million. It made about $15 million, runs about 101 minutes, and stars the amazing, who's in most of John Carpenter's films, Donald Pleasance, Victor Wong, Egg Chen himself, Dirk Blocker, Jameson Parker, Lisa Blount, and an excellent cameo from Alice Cooper, fantastic, who might have done the, might almost did a song for the film, but didn't. So, so yes.
He has the credit at the end of the film.
Correct. Correct. So Prince of Darkness, let's talk about, so, you know, this movie came out in 1987. I do not remember seeing this in the theater, but I remember seeing it later on when I was going to the local video store and seeing the cover. I remember my expectations from kind of like the cover. I was like, okay, I like John Carpenter, you know, my young self. And it's like, okay, I'll give this a shot. And I must say that my expectations, because I think I had seen a couple other of his films earlier, and I was like, I like this movie, but it's not my favorite. I think Prince of Darkness might be his least fun for me, even though it's a good movie. But that's how like my expectations were for it. What do you think, Preston?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I have certain images from the film that have stuck with me ever since I was young, but it had been a long time since I had seen it. But I own it because I bought the, you know, the regular Scream Factory, and I got the Steelbook edition. Steelbook, there you go, nerd alert. but it's so I watched it a couple years ago, and I watched it again last night in preparation for this. But yeah, it's kind of it's more of an interesting film than anything. It's not, like you said, it's not quite, it's not enjoyable. I think, you know, the most fun films Carpenter has for me, you know, as a big fan of the original Halloween and then Big Trouble in Little China and The Thing and They Live. But it's a bit slow. It's characters who are trying to sound smarter than they really are. I know Carpenter was inspired by like reading books about quantum physics and that sort of thing. And that kind of got him down this path of wanting to explore a film that brings the idea of science and church into one film. But it doesn't explore that well enough to where I'm just like, damn, this is incredible work, because it kind of leans more towards one side by the end of the film. But there are certain images in this film that still hold up really well. It's still a bit goofy. There's one performance in this film in particular played by Dennis Dunn, plays this character named Walter, who gets like trapped in this room surrounded by possessed people who've been exposed to this anti-God, anti-Christ goop. Which just sprays on you like a sprinkler. And so he just like very melodramatic and is screaming his head off and saying, I got to go to the bathroom at random times. So there's just like a lot of puzzling moments. But overall, I just found myself kind of lost in the concept. And but it doesn't quite deliver its story doesn't quite deliver. Its themes don't quite deliver. And the performances are a bit all over the place, but the practical effects, because this movie has like such a small budget, but they do a lot of like cool stuff. So if you like watch the extras on Scream, the Scream Factory extras, you get to see kind of like the breakdown of them reversing shots or putting certain shots upside down because the cylinder that's in the film has like goop that falls to the ceiling, or not falls, but rises to the ceiling, but they shot it upside down, so it makes it look like it's like naturally falling. So there's just like a lot of cool stuff, and that's what John Carpenter's always been great at. So there's a charm, there's a fun to that of like putting like, I guess, like a low budget film school kind of thing, just seeing how he accomplishes certain things. So I think all that stuff's there, but it's, yeah, in the long run, looking at his filmography, it's like middle of the bucket type stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so, there's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah. So basically, if you're unfamiliar, don't remember Prince of Darkness, it basically follows this priest who invites this astrophysicist professor and several other people to a basement of the church where they're like, holy shit, there's this green goop there that supposedly, what is it? It's like the spirit of Satan or something like that. And then it like Preston said, like a sprinkler sprays on them, and then people are possessed, people are killing people, and it gets kind of like almost like to a lot of people around town. It's like a thing.
Homeless people.
So it's very similar to the thing in the sense that it's...
Yeah, it goes from person to person. And there's like an underlying homeless social commentary on it too. But it's an interesting thing because he's... When you think of John Carpenter, you think of like a mass killer, or do you think of like alien monster things? And there's that here, but this I think is like his Satan movie. And like Preston said, it is. I think it's his least cohesive one. And if I say that, interestingly, because if you watch something like Big Trouble in Little China, you're like, holy shit, there's so many things going on in this movie. It doesn't make sense, but it all makes sense and sticks together. This one I feel like is just like a much more slower burn and with tons of characters you just don't really care about. Am I right there?
Yeah, so my wife was like sewing in the background and she was like, did that girl just say what I think I said? Or the guy that, one of the main guys that's in the film, Jameson Parker plays Brian Marsh. He kind of has like this porno mustache in the film. He looks like John Carpenter a little bit. It's kind of crazy, but he says like this joke about, it's very, I don't know how to describe it, but it's a very, sexual joke that, sexist joke that I just don't think works. And he even calls it a joke, but so there's just like these little moments that are kind of strange to watch, nowadays, but, There's still a little bit of intrigue there with the concept. I think Carpenter describes this not so much as Satan, but like as an anti-god, because there's a lot of exposition in this film. There's a scene where they're talking about how the reason why Jesus Christ died was he was trying to warn people about his existence, the anti-god's existence, and then he is killed. So it's like finding unique ways to kind of like just fill in the void of the world, all the kind of questions that we may have about our own existence and like where we come from and how the world operates and what does the universe surrounding us have to contribute to this crazy situation. And so there's a lot there. I think even Donald Pleasant's character has some line about the world is run by the corrupt, and so it kind of plays into a lot of the stuff that we're dealing with today. So like I mentioned before, like that's where Carpenter kind of excels with the practical effects, but he also excels with bringing in these like interesting social commentaries, kind of like They Live, when we talked about They Live. And when you get into, by the end of the film, you like learn certain things and, it kind of informs like what we're going through in the world today. So like all that stuff is very fascinating. I just don't think he's the best at kind of like illustrating a lot of those thoughts. They're not cohesive thoughts. So like maybe if he had maybe handed off the material to somebody else to kind of like bring in this more interesting narrative, more interesting characters, it probably would have been great. But
right, because you don't have like the outlandish, over the top characters from his other movies like we do here. I mean, not in like a Jack Burton type of way. What do you think, Andrew? About Prince of Darkness? Have you?
I've actually had not got a chance to see it yet.
But you like John Carpenter stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's great.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good, and it's good to watch if you're enjoying John Carpenter. But I think if you're like, let's watch a John Carpenter movie, I think very not a lot you're not going to be like, let's watch Prince of Darkness.
So, go ahead, Preston.
Yeah, I was just going to say, out of the Apocalypse trilogy that he did with the Thing and In the Mouth of Madness, those are all much better films to me. But this isn't one that I will probably like revisit. So this week was more of homework for me.
Right. What were you going to say, Andrew?
I was curious, like out of the three movies in the Apocalypse trilogy, you feel this one's the weakest?
Absolutely. Yeah. The Thing, top, In the Mouth of Madness, and then this one. But interestingly, the movie being the middle kind of like serves as a bridge between the ideas of the thing within the Mouth of Madness. So it's like interesting to see like how he's kind of like grown as a director, and maybe in where he's, what areas he kind of like lost his specialness. I find myself more interested in watching like the interviews and the extras and the documentaries and that sort of thing about this particular film, or in a good chunk of his films, more than I like watching them. But he's still, I mean, just the kind of like Jordan Peele, like he's just a very, he's smart. He knows what he's talking about. And I'm only saying this because of Us. I didn't really like Us a whole lot. I gave it a, you know, passing grade and everything we talked about in the past, but, it's just what kind of came to mind, where like a lot of the ideas are just not communicated very well, but, it's still fascinating to explore and talk about with people. So,
so yeah. I feel like he took a calculated risk on this one. It just didn't really pay off because he was trying to do a little too much and wasn't able to sort of bring it all together.
I guess you could say that, but yeah, it seems like he just got so fired up by reading these stories that it was just like he just hit the ground running and didn't know exactly where to kind of like pause for a second and be like, all right, I have this idea. I don't want to run too quickly here. I need to focus on this for a moment. And that's what you need to do. You need to just kind of pause in some areas and be like, I don't want to just dangle all this information out there and be like, wow, like as an audience being like, wow, what does that mean? While these moments kind of come off very silly, like Alice Cooper kills a guy with a half a bicycle, which is kind of inspired, which is inspired by like him, John Carpenter, going to his Alice Cooper's concerts. And he's very, Alice Cooper's very theatrical, and he like kills people on stage, not really, but like he like kills somebody with like his mic stand and that sort of thing. So that was like his way of kind of doing it. So I don't know, like there's a whole lot going on here. And I think if he would have mapped it out a little bit better, it could have been better. But it's just, like I've been saying, it's just not illustrated very well.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of my, even though it's kind of like saying like your least favorite Tarantino movie, even though you like all of his movies.
Death Proof?
I love Death Proof. God damn it. I love that movie. Even though it's like the same movie twice in a row, but I still like it. So it's kind of like the way with John Carpenter with Prince of Darkness. It's like, it's not my least favorite, but I, you know, it's like something like let's watch a John Carpenter movie. I'm not going to go to this one first unless like I've seen all the other one and I haven't seen this one. Okay. Prince of Darkness, will watch it in that case in point. But with this one,
But I do, like, I think we should talk a little bit about some of the images in this movie. Like, what's your favorite image, Brian? But I really like the very last shot of the film because it ends on like a cliffhanger kind of way. And you're like, oh, I don't know what to make of that. It's very ambiguous. But in the Mondo record, the middle part of it that I was talking about where, you know, part of the scene was or at least the scene was shot in John Carpenter's pool where it's made to look like, one of the evil characters is like trying to reach out to make contact with the anti-god to bring him or her into our world, and they're trying to stop that from happening, and Donald Pleasant's character comes up and like chops off the hand and it grows back in like this really strange, bizarre way, and then gets her decapitated, and then the head is placed back on top. So like there's just some frightening, terrifying shit here. And so was there like a particular moment in the film that like maybe pierced itself into your memory?
You know, I always like those scenes, you know, those scenes in movies where somebody's staring at a mirror and something like reaches out of the mirror or they reach into the mirror, kind of like an Evil Dead or Army of Darkness or even The Matrix. That kind of happens in Prince of Darkness, and I always like that type of thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, yeah, in this movie, they had the actors stick their fingers into mercury.
Right, which is good on John Carpenter.
Yeah, yeah, real, you know, safe. very safe. But yeah, like all that stuff is because it was all done practically. It looks really cool and terrifying. You know, there's quite a few horror films out there that make mirrors scary. And so he found like a different way to kind of make it where like you don't even want to get super close to a mirror because you may fall through and go to hell.
Right.
Or hell may come and get you. So,
Which frightens me.
Despite all its pitfalls, there's some really good stuff.
Yeah, so that frightens me, even like with vampires and mirrors, or even in the movie Constantine, in that first scene where the demon gets trapped in the mirror. Like, that stuff freaks me out. So in this movie, Prince of Darkness, there are several scenes with small and big mirrors, and it's just really cool to see that.
Yeah, yeah. So
those are mine. But yeah, Prince of Darkness, I still recommend this movie because it has a lot of really cool themes. You'll get to see Donald Pleasance and Alice Cooper and a good John Carpenter score. And, you know, it goes along the lines, in the same kind of, not universe, but like The Thing and In the Mouth of Madness, kind of like, oh God, because at the end you're like, holy shit, this might happen to kill everyone everywhere. So
yeah,
I kind of like that aspect, and good on John Carpenter for doing so. But is that it? Is that are we going to spoil? Are we going to tease something for next week? Or we already did, kind of, right?
I guess we kind of did. Yeah, if you get it in time, Brian, I guess we'll do The Manitou. I know I've talked that up in this one, but if listeners, if you've never seen this, watch this movie before we talk about it next week, because it's just. It's one of the most insane movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Like it just reaches a point. I think, I don't remember if I made this connection or not, in my review, I may have wrote it down, but then ended up deleting it. But, it's kind of like, Aquaman in that when you watch that movie, it just completely embraces its weirdness. Like it just knows. It's just like, yeah, you see an octopus playing the drums. Who cares?
It's the prequel to Aquaman.
Yeah. When you have a 400-year-old Native American spirit coming out of somebody's neck. Yeah. They're pretty comparable. But yeah, the movie's wild. So Manitou came out in 1978. So I think that's what we'll do next week if it works out.
I think it will, but yes, thank you for listening to My Bloody Podcast today. Be sure to check out Prince of Darkness and get it on Scream Factory. If so, check out The Peanut Butter Solution, Evil Speak, and in theaters now, High Life with Robert Pattinson and Juliette Binoche. And I'm Brian Kluger. We're My Bloody Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play, boomstickcomics.com, highdefdigest.com, where we're talking about movies and high-def gear, 4Ks and Blu-rays and movie reviews. And I want to say thank you to Andrew Conway for joining us.
Oh, thank you,
yeah,
love it.
About
I've
peanut
missed
butter
you.
Solution.
The what?
And talking about Peanut Butter Solution, bringing that back.
Yeah, bringing it back. And I've just missed doing a podcast with Andrew. We used to do one every week for a couple of years, and I just love having him here. And then Preston. Preston can be found all over YouPorn, I think. Where what videos?
Yes, yes. Pornhub, yeah, all those. I made this joke before, but I do reviews while engaging in porn. I'm on freshfiction.tv. I'm the features editor there, posting all kinds of stuff from all different people. And I am the writer at Denton Record Chronicle, DentonRC.com. So I believe between the both websites that I write for, I have interviews up and will have multiple interviews up. But by the weekend, I have Fast Color that's also coming out this weekend. It's a really good film. Kind of like a low-key X-Men type thing, like Looper or something like that. So if you're into that sort of thing, check that out. I interviewed the director and the star of that film. And then, yeah, I'll have my Miami Connection interview up with YK Kim. There's like so many things. So anyway, I got a lot of stuff that's going up, and so you should go check it out between those two sites. And then you can also follow me on Preston Barta on Twitter and Instagram.
There you go. Check him out and check out My Bloody Podcast. And thank you again, Preston and Andrew Conway.
Yeah.